President Ibrahim Raisi says Iran will protect the rights of its people to the very end as high-stakes diplomacy continues to revive the 2015 nuclear deal. Russia says it has destroyed an ammunition depot in Ukraine's Odessa region. It contained missiles for U.S.-made HIMARS and other Western anti-aircraft systems. And Somali officials raised the death toll from a 30-hour hotel siege by al-Shabaab terrorists in Mogadishu to 21, with scores more wounded. Thanks for joining us. Iran says it will not give up the rights of the nation in any talks or meetings amid a flurry of diplomatic exchanges to revive the 2015 deal known as the JCPOA. The Iranian president says that his administration will powerfully continue efforts to resolve the country's problems and to push for its progress. Ibrahim Raisi vowed not to tie people's livelihoods to any foreign factor. He said that Iran has secured a considerable part of its demands from some other countries. Comments come amid intense speculation about the fate of the JCPOA after Iran provided its written response to the most recent EU proposal to salvage the pact. Tehran says Washington must now show flexibility and take a realistic approach if it really wants a final agreement. The Palestinian president slams Israel's forced closure of seven Palestinian non-governmental organizations in the occupied West Bank. Mahmoud Abbas said the regime's unilateral actions are unacceptable and in violation of international law. While he hailed the international consensus condemning the closures, Abbas noted practical international measures are needed to stop Israel's aggressive policies. The Palestinian president added that the NGOs will continue to expose Israeli crimes, irrespective of the shutdown order. On Friday, nine European countries, including France and Germany, said that they were deeply concerned by the Israeli move. The UN has also urged the regime to allow the NGOs to continue working.
The Israeli military shut down seven Palestinian non-governmental civil society and human rights organizations in the occupied West Bank. Early on Thursday, the Israeli military raided occupied Ramallah and broke into the offices of the organizations. The offices were ransacked and their equipment confiscated. Doors were welded shut with an Israeli military order posted on them declaring the organizations unlawful. The groups have decried the move as politically motivated and baseless.
They are targeting by the seven organizations. They are targeting the civil society sector in Palestine and the human rights sector in general. So the message was any organization talked about expose the Israeli policy, talked about the Israeli crimes will be targeted and will be silent. Again, the message also for the international organizations and, of course, also for the EU states, those who are rejected the Israeli allegation against the organizations. This is a message that Israel is above the law.
Israel has outlawed six of these NGOs, which were labeled as terrorist organizations in October 2021, and accused them of funneling donor aid to militants and had ties to the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, a Palestinian left-wing movement. The organizations that have been outlawed by Israel are Ad-Damir and Al-Haq, which document human rights violations, and the Union of Palestinian Women's Committees, Bissan Center for Research, DCI, Defense for Children International Palestine, as well as the Union of Agricultural Work Committees. The seventh organization was the Union of Health Work Committees.
We will continue our work. Work in this field, it's not a job. It's not a job. The Israelis continue their atrocities, their oppression against us, against the rest of the civil society organizations here. But this will not stop us, and this will not push us back, and we will not give up, and we will continue. We know that we pay price, maybe personal price, maybe different kind of a price, but we are ready to defend, to fight for the principles that we do believe.
The United Nations Human Rights Office has meanwhile expressed alarm at Israel's arbitrary closure of organizations and called on Israel to immediately reverse these decisions, reiterating the High Commissioner's call to revoke the designations of the organizations as terrorist and unlawful. The Israeli regime has added to its illegal practices which aim to silence the Palestinian people. Today, not only does it continue to suppress Palestinian people, the regime also quells these organizations and human rights advocates. Mona Qandil, occupied Ramallah.
Moving on to Ukraine, where the war is now approaching its seventh month. Moscow says it has destroyed an ammunition depot in Odessa region. The Defense Ministry says it contained missiles for U.S.-made HIMARS rocket and other Western-made anti-aircraft systems. According to the ministry, sea-based caliber missiles were used in the attack. Ukrainian authorities say that five missiles were fired from the Black Sea overnight, adding that air defenses shut down two of them, while the other three hit an agricultural facility. Moscow also says that two M777 howitzers were destroyed in the southern region of Kherson, and a fuel depot was struck in the Zaporizhzhia region. In the meantime, Ukrainian authorities say that the city of Nikopol, near the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant, was shelled overnight. The daughter of a controversial Russian political commentator has been killed in a suspected car bomb attack outside of Moscow. Investigators say that Daria Dugina, the daughter of Alexander Dugin, was killed when a suspected explosive device detonated on the vehicle that she was traveling in. Investigators, who described Daria Dugina as a journalist and political expert, said they had opened a murder case and would be carrying out forensic examinations to try to determine exactly what had happened. Her father is a veteran Russian philosopher known for his staunch anti-Western views. Alexander Dugin is described in the West as one of the Kremlin's ideological masterminds, but is considered a marginal figure in Russia. Our correspondent Marina Kortonova tells us more about the circumstances surrounding the suspected bomb attack killing Daria Dugina.
At 6 o'clock yesterday evening, Alexander Dugin gave a lecture, Traditions and History, at the Tradition Festival in the village of Zakharova. This is Moscow region, not far away from Kubinka and from other places. His daughter was also there as a guest. At half past 9 o'clock in the evening, Daria left the festival on the car Land Cruiser Prada. The explosive device was planted in the car that belonged to Alexander Dugin, who at the last moment decided to get into another car and followed Daria. The car left for Majaiskaya Highway, and the explosion occurred near the village of Bolshie Vizhomye. The bomb went off while the vehicle was moving. After the explosion, the car crashed into a fence, and Daria Dugina, who was driving the car, died immediately. Directly behind the Dasha was his father, who saw all this happen before his eyes. He's in the hospital at the moment. And the death of Daria Dugina is sacred. They beat Dugin. They wanted to kill him physically or kill him through the death of his beloved daughter. And the idea that the word and idea continue to be an important and dangerous subject of life.
The UK government is facing calls to act after a PhD student at Leeds University was jailed in Saudi Arabia for using Twitter. Opposition Labour lawmaker Hilary Benn has called on Foreign Minister Liz Truss to press for the release of 34-year-old Saudi Salma al-Shahab. Benn says Britain has a duty to speak out over the case of the mother of two. Al-Shahab was detained last year after returning to Saudi Arabia to visit her family. Earlier this week, an appeals court sentenced her to 34 years in prison, followed by a 34-year travel ban for tweeting on women's rights and retweeting posts calling for the release of imprisoned activists in Saudi Arabia. The ruling has drawn global condemnation, with activists calling it outrageous and shocking. Al-Shahab says that she has been subjected to abuse and harassment during her interrogations. Saudi Arabia has been under fire internationally for its poor human rights record, but earlier this year, Truss declined to criticize the kingdom, saying that Riyadh is an important partner of the UK. Our London correspondent Mina Taylor says the British government's approach towards Saudi human rights violations smacks of double standards and a profit-driven mindset.
You know, what's really distressing about this is these are the very same ministers who will stand in front of a podium and be highly vocal, highly critical of the way other countries behave. And when it's clearly such an appalling affront to justice, to proportionality in terms of whatever you may think of what this lady is accused to have done, a 34-year sentence by any stretch of the imagination is disproportionate, cruel, and inhumane. And I think that's what really serves up and gives a real account of where Britain is in terms of putting profit before human rights.
The flow of goods grinds to a halt at the UK's largest container port, where dock workers have begun their first strike in 30 years over a pay dispute. The walkout involves 1,900 staff members of Felixstowe Port. They are represented by Unite Union. It says the 8-day action is in response to the port operator's failure to give dock workers a raise proportionate to inflation. Unite says the industrial action will cause huge disruption and will send shockwaves through the UK supply chain. The strike is the latest in a string of similar moves by workers across different sectors. That's amid a cost of living crisis in Britain, where consumer price inflation has hit 10.1% in July.
Shuttered stations and picket lines. Another day of severe disruption in the British capital.
We're just outside an underground station in West London, usually a very busy station, but today it is closed. The same thing or very limited service across many different stations in London for 24 hours.
It comes a day after another mass walkout of railway workers. The advice from the authorities, avoid traveling on the tube if possible.
I'm with them because it's true. When you're 60, why should you retire? I mean, why should they give you redundancy?
I mean, the cost of living's going up and all that. They're asking for a fair thing. Same in any job. They're offering silly things like 3% when inflation now is 10%. So I'm fully behind them.
I understand the people. That's normal. They are workers. They need more money, of course. Everything is rising.
A major bus walkout will also affect travel in parts of the capital. While a second day of rail strikes is expected to disrupt services around the country on Saturday. Almost all are part of widespread stoppages in recent months organized mainly by the National Union of Railway, Maritime and Transport Workers, locked in a face-off with the government over modernizing changes, wages and pensions, among other things.
People in this country are fed up with low pay. Many millions of people have had not a proper pay deal for a decade. So public sector workers in healthcare, education, transport, all sorts of services have been subjected to pay cuts and rampant inflation.
The ongoing strikes are inspiring other public sector workers, such as nurses and teachers, to do the same in the face of rampant inflation forecast to top 13% this year.
In the next few months, you're bound to see a convergence of trade unions all taking very direct action, calling their members on strike in an effort to protect the cost of living increases and the deterioration of wages that we've seen for workers across the country.
The government has threatened to use emergency powers to block future strikes. The unions, on the other hand, say they're not relenting unless they receive new deals they deem acceptable. Saeed Puriza, London.
The Somali military has ended the al-Shabaab terrorist siege on a hotel in the capital, Mogadishu. The 30-hour crisis came to an end after forces pounded the Hyatt Hotel with heavy weapons late Saturday to eliminate the gunmen. Al-Shabaab launched a gun and bomb attack on the building on Friday, killed at least 21 people and injured dozens more. Security sources say the building is yet to be cleared of possible explosives. The attack is the biggest in Mogadishu since Somalia's new government took office in June. Al-Shabaab is an affiliate of Al-Qaeda and controls much of southern and central Somalia. It has engaged in a long-running conflict with the federal government. More American officials are paying visits to the island of Taiwan, despite stern warnings from Russia, or China, I should say. The governor of Indiana is the latest to arrive in Taipei. Eric Holcomb has called the visit an economic development trip, saying that it's intended to build new relationships with Taiwan. Recent visits to the self-ruled island by U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and other lawmakers have escalated tensions between Washington and Beijing. China has responded by imposing sanctions on Pelosi and staging unprecedented drills near the island, deploying fighter jets, warships, and ballistic missiles. Beijing claims Taiwan as its own territory and says such trips interfere with its internal affairs and undermine the country's sovereignty and territorial integrity. After decades of violence, hopes are rising for peace in Colombia. The country's new president says that he is suspending arrest warrants and extradition requests for members of the Rebel National Liberation Army, or the ELN. Gustavo Petro says that the move is aimed at restarting peace talks to end nearly 60 years of war. Petro says that he has authorized the reinstatement of protocols to allow the renegotiations to resume with the left-wing guerrilla group. Petro took office on August 7 on pledges to bring total peace to the Andean country. Talks with the ELN kicked off under the former government of Juan Manuel Santos, but were halted in 2019. The group said soon after Petro's election that it was willing to consider negotiations. Just days ago, it freed six members of the security forces in a goodwill gesture. With that, we come to an end for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
About yourself?
I'm Eric Shumanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of physics. My dad, who taught me the art of
writing. Listeners special.
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Salam and warm greetings to you all, and welcome to this week's edition of Listeners Special on this beautiful Sunday, August 21st, 2022. I'm Atefa Erfani, hosting this program today. Listeners Special is the Sunday program where your views are presented through emails, letters, and messages. So, contact us and tell us what you think about IRIB English Radio broadcast. And if you have any message for our great listeners around the world, you can record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard in this program. Remember, Listeners Special is your program. It's your views that are important. So please don't go away and keep us company until the end of the program. Thank you. Welcome back. This is Listeners Special, your program. And as usual, many of you have taken the trouble of sending us reception reports. These reception reports are very helpful to us, especially to our technicians and engineers. These reception reports enable us to provide a better service to our listeners around the world. All of you who have sent in a reception report will be receiving an electronic QSL card or an eQSL card from us. And here, I truly appreciate those of our listeners who have kindly sent us reception reports, including Mizanur Rahman from Bangladesh, Reginaldo Naldi from Brazil, and Juan Antonio Bertolin from Spain. And we've received, as usual, many emails and letters from around the world, which I mention some of their names here. And later during the program, I will read these emails. So for this edition of Listeners Special, we will read an email from Juanric Avila Fernandez from Costa Rica, Siddhartha Bhattacharji from India, one of our old and regular listeners, David Mabi from Finland, Thomas Kutas from Poland, and the last but not the least, an email from Hector Fria Jofre from Chile, who is one of our old and regular listeners. After a short break, I will be back with you. Welcome back. As I said, Juanric Avila Fernandez has sent us an email from Costa Rica, so let's see what he says. Dear friends of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, I send you a cordial and warm greeting. My name is Juanric Avila Fernandez, and I am from Costa Rica. I would like to start this email by sending you the following. My father is very fond of Iranian culture. He spends his free time drawing portraits by hand. He has several friends in the Islamic Republic of Iran. For my part, I know a lot about the Persian culture. I listen to the broadcast in the English language when the weather conditions allow me. Especially, I like the program The Call of Islam because I find a lot of wisdom in it. I love the Persian culture, art, and literature of Iran. You're really people with a wonderful and charming culture. May God continue to bless you. I say goodbye, wishing all those who work in the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting good health and peace. I await a prompt response and a QSL. First of all, salam and warm greetings to you from Tehran, the Islamic Republic of Iran, and your favorite radio station, IRIB English Radio. Thank you very much for sending us this email, Juanric Avila Fernandez from Costa Rica. I think it's the first time that we've received an email from you, so I suppose you have to be a new listener. I really enjoyed your message. It's great. It's great that you and your father are interested in the Iranian culture. So I have a suggestion. You can tune in to IRIB English Radio all the time and enjoy a variety of programs about the Iranian culture. Juanric Avila Fernandez from Costa Rica, wish you all the best. Write to us soon. My colleagues will soon send you an electronic QSL card as a verification. Thank you again. And from India, we've received an email from Siddhartha Bhattacharji, one of our old and regular listeners. Let's see what Siddhartha says. Here, I submit audio file of your broadcast. Hope it will be a great help for you and your technicians. Kindly send me your program schedule, sticker, stamps, and other promotional material, which is available in order to represent your radio here in India. Salam and warm greetings to you, Siddhartha Bhattacharjee from India, one of our old and regular listeners. Thank you very much for sending us this email. Yes, we've received the audio file you sent. Thank you for that. And as for your request about sending you the promotional items of IRIB English Radio, unfortunately, we can't, because sending any material on behalf of IRIB English Radio at the time of pandemic is not possible. But we have an option. Sending our great listeners an electronic QSL card. Thank you again, Siddhartha Bhattacharjee from India. Wish you luck. Write to us soon. And after a short break, I will be back with other emails from our listeners from around the world. Welcome back. David Mabi from Finland has sent us an email. Let's see what David says. Dear friends at IRIB English Radio, I have been a regular listener to your broadcast on shortwave for about 3 months now and saw it was high time I sent you a reception report plus a few comments about your programs. Listening to you has opened the door into another culture, and this has naturally been an enlightening experience. In particular, I have listened to your news broadcast with attention plus various features such as In the Limelight. By the way, I am 71-year-old who recently returned to listening on shortwave. Originally, I was a DX listener in my youth. My home is located on the southwest coast of Finland. I hope my reception report is of use to you. Please, could you verify my report with your EQSL? In the meantime, best wishes and hope to hear from you soon. Salam and warmest greetings to you from Tehran, the Islamic Republic of Iran, and from your favorite radio station, IRIB English Radio. Please accept our warm appreciations and gratitudes to you for sending us this kind message. David Mabi from Finland. So, it's for 3 months that you've been listening to IRIB English Radio. I suppose you have to be a new listener. It's a pleasure to have you with us. So you like the new section as well as our analytic program In the Limelight. They're my favorite too, David Mabi. Thank you. Wish you luck. Write to us soon. And your reception report is very, very helpful to us. Yes, send reception reports, because by these reception reports, we will know about the quality of our programs. Thank you, David Mabi from Finland. We are looking forward to hearing from you. My colleagues will soon send you an EQSL card. And from Poland, we've received an email from Thomas Kotas. Let's see what Thomas says. Dear staff, I am contacting you with a reception report of your broadcast. Thank you for taking the time to read my report. I hope you found it useful. If this reception report is accurate and you have the time, please verify it with an EQSL or email confirmation. Thank you. Salam and warm greetings to you, Thomas Kotas from Poland. And thank you for this message, Thomas. It's really kind of you. Wish you all the best. We are looking forward to hearing from you soon and knowing your views about our broadcast. Thomas Kotas from Poland, we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. And after a short break, I will be back with an email from Hector Friehofer from Chile. Yes, this is Listeners Special, and one of our old and regular listeners, Hector Furiahofra from Chile, has sent us a message. Let's see what Hector says. Dear friends of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting IRIB English Radio, I send my greetings and also a report in audio enclosed to my email confirming that I have been a listener of your radio. I would like to receive information about your country, and I certainly want to obtain a QSL card or an EQSL if it would be possible. First of all, salam and warm greetings to you from Tehran, the Islamic Republic of Iran. Hector Furiahofra from Chile, and please accept our warm gratitude to you for sending us this message. Yes, we've received your audio files. Thank you for that. And my colleague will soon send you an electronic QSL card as a confirmation. Thank you for this email. Write to us soon and tell us your views about the broadcast of IRIB English Radio. So, time tells me that we have to wrap up this edition of Listeners Special. Many thanks for being with us. But before I say goodbye to you, I send my appreciations to those of our listeners who have kindly sent us emails, letters, and reception reports from around the world, including Hector Friahofer from Chile, Juan Antonio Bertolin from Spain, Mizanur Rahman from Bangladesh, Reginaldo Naldi from Brazil, Juan Rick Avila Fernandez from Costa Rica, Siddhartha Bittacharji from India, David Moby from Finland, and Thomas Kotas from Poland. Thank you for being with us, and goodbye.
Dear listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We'll be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send your emails to EnglishRadio@irib.ir. That is one word, EnglishRadio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at www.pastoday.com/en. Our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Once again, our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Our profile is also in Facebook. Our address is www.facebook.com/pastodayenglish. Thank you all for being with IRIB English Radio.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladhina amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis-sabri was-salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, now let's listen to Sheikh Salim Bimji.
My dear brothers and sisters in Iman, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I want to try in the next little while that I have to speak, I want to look at some of the concepts of Surah Al-Fajr. Chapter 89 of the Holy Quran. I'm sure it's a chapter many of us have read. I'm sure many of us have committed this chapter to heart. And I want to see how this chapter actually fits with the revolution of Aba Abdullah alayhi salam. And you know, as we know, all of the chapters of the Quran have their own importance. We can never say that Surah Mulk is more important than Surah Qalam, or that Surah Yasin is more important than Surah Baqarah. They all have value and merit. Obviously, certain chapters and ayat have a special merit. And we have a hadith that tells us, for example, the spiritual power behind certain chapters. And we are encouraged, for example, to read certain chapters. You know, so when we go to a qabristan, for example, we have majlis for the thawab of our marhumin. We would not read Surah Al-Kafirun. Right? It's a chapter of the Quran, but the content of it would not fit with that gathering. And so we have hadith that tell us, for example, recite Surah Al-Mulk at the graveyard, or Surah Yasin. Again, the entire Quran is rahmah, is mercy, but certain chapters have a certain prominence or importance. As ayat do, Ayatul Kursi is a verse of the Quran, just as any other verse of the Quran is, but because Rasulullah gave it particular importance through obviously the teachings of Allah, we memorize Ayatul Kursi, we frame it in our homes, we hang it in our car, we use Ayatul Kursi for protection, and there's nothing wrong with that because these are taught to us by the repository of knowledge, which is our Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam. So when it comes to Surah Al-Fajr, here what does Allah say in Surah Al-Fajr? He takes another oath, an oath after an oath after an oath. Then he says, وَاللَّيْلِ إِذَا يَسَرْ. And I swear by the night, when it journeys on, when it travels. You know, scholars here, they mention a very fine point about the Quran, which we will never pick up just by reading a translation. And this is why, again, I stress on the fact that Quran needs to be understood not only through translation, but commentary. Unfortunately, we don't have a full commentary in English that I could even recommend to the believers to read. There are things that are underway, but they will take years to complete. Even Al-Mizan is only one half complete, the publication of it. It'll still take maybe 5 to 8 years for the printing and distribution to be finished. But even when that comes out, that would have been a tafsir which was written 40 years ago, 50 years ago. Albeit, it'll still be some value, but it's 50-year-old research, basically. But you look at this, وَاللَّيْلِ إِذَا يَسَرْ, the night as it travels forth. Allah is using a very subtle allusion here. He's actually explaining or describing the night as moving forth as human beings walk, as we travel, as we traverse. You know, when we speak in English, I'll say, I went from here to there. I went from Richmond to, I don't know, North Van. I went from here to another destination. But you won't say time went from here to there, right? Time doesn't move in that way. Time does progress, and there's an entire philosophical discussion on what is time. But I won't say time moved from Vancouver to North Van or to Vancouver Island. No, time is time. Day and night don't travel, right? We think, oh, you know, the sun rises in the east and sets in the west, it travels. But it's not traveling on a journey, because we're on earth, we look at it, at these celestial bodies, and we think them to move in that method. But Allah here says, وَاللَّيْلِ إِذَا يَسَرْ, that the night is traveling, it's going through its stages. Allah has taken this personification of the night. He's giving night a human quality of it traveling. Again, we know the night doesn't travel. But the ultimate destination, as our scholars say, when they look at Al-Fajr and its relation to Aba Abdullah, is that spiritual journey on the night of Ashura. You know, when we hear in the masaib of our scholars who ascend the minbar, about the tent of the Banu Hashim on Shab-e Ashura, and they would go to Aba Abdullah and ask him, will we also be killed, as young Qasim would ask his uncle? And his uncle would turn to him and say, oh my dear son, how do you find death? كَيْفَ الْمَوْتَ indak? And this young boy would say, أَحْلَى مِنَ الْأَصَلِ, sweeter than honey. Or the other tent of the companions, where they are in ruku all night, or sajda all night, or reading Quran all night, or in du'as all night. And when Bibi Zainab alayhi salam asks Abu Abdullah, can you trust your companions? Maybe these are like the companions of the Prophet, some of them that unfortunately deserted Rasulullah. And when the companions heard that there was this questioning of their integrity, as we know, people like Habib, the 90-year-old Habib ibn Madahir, and people like Muslim ibn Awsaja, people would come out and say what? They would say, even if we were to be killed, cut into pieces, our body burnt and thrown, ashes thrown into the wind, and this would happen 100 times, wallah, we would never leave you, Abu Abdullah. These kinds of men were traveling on that night, not a physical journey, but spiritually they're making that sojourn, that travel, that journey towards Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. They're making that spiritual migration towards Allah on a night of on the 10th of Muharram. So this is one of the examples we have in Surah Al-Fajr of the night of Ashura, this night that is moving. It's obviously standing still, but it's moving in a certain way. And obviously, just like the companions were moving towards Allah, that should have also been our goal and should be our goal even tonight, is as we move through these days till the day of Arba'een, that just as the caravan of Ahlul Bayt moved from Karbala to Kufa, Kufa to Sham, Sham all the way back to Karbala, that we also continue in that journey, in that quest for Allah, in that quest for recognizing Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, looking for the beauty in everything that comes up in our lives, looking for beauty in the tragedies, and looking for beauty in the pleasures that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala gives us. But just to leave us with one point here before I go to the end, is that it's not only about these qasams, about the night and the fajr and the ten and the odd and the even. Allah gives us, and we'll look at that inshallah next time, but Allah gives us stories of three different communities, of the people of Ad, of Thamud, and Fir'aun. And the fact that they spread corruption on the earth, the fact that they were responsible for creating diversion from Allah, that they were more preoccupied with their own power, solidifying and consolidating power in themselves. Fir'aun, whom as we all know in the Quran, claimed to be the Rabb, the Lord. People like Ad, the tribes or the nation of Ad, who came 5 or 6 generations after Prophet Noah alayhi salam, the Thamud. Allah gives them, and we'll look at that next time, that Allah gives us very descriptive examples of them in the Quran. And again, when you and I try and tie this in together to Karbala, we have examples. We have the Banu Umayyah, first and foremost, people who were, as Allah says, فَأَكْثَرُوا فِيهَا الْفَسَادِ. They continuously engaged in corruption. It wasn't just Yazid la'natullah alayhi that began this train of corruption that Abu Abdullah had to take that stand on the day of Ashura. It was all of those that came before him. We confessed that in the ziyarat of Ashura that we recite, that it was those people who began the process of removing Ali Muhammad from their status that they had. Allati rattabakumu Allahu fiha, that status Allah had given to them that was removed or stripped away from them. And it continued. And what we saw on the 10th of Muharram, brothers and sisters, was one angle, one aspect of the oppression that had been meted out to Ali Muhammad alayhim as-salatu was-salam from the very first day of the split in humanity.
We say you live forever in our hearts and in our minds.
Oh, we say you live forever
in our hearts and in our minds. I swear to Allah, unto my last breath, I will remember
to Allah whenever I face troubles in my life. I close my eyes and
see your shrine and call back every time. Oh, Hussein, you're the love of my heart. You are the light of my eyes. I swear to Allah, until my last breath, I will remember Hussein.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
Until the international community brings sufficient pressure to push Israeli regime authorities to abandon their long-standing policy to subdue the Palestinians of Gaza, this vicious cycle will continue, says Omar Shaker, Palestine director at Human Rights Watch, in an article published under the heading, Cage, Smother, Subdue, and Repeat, Israeli Regime's Gaza Policy. Stay tuned for more. Clips of Israeli regime airstrikes raining down on Gaza, images of homes reduced to rubble and the men, women and children buried below. Sirens heralding the latest barrage of Palestinian rockets fired towards Israeli population centers. The dread of a rising death toll, the calls for restraint. This sequence has played on a loop time and time again in recent years. For those who care about Palestine, the overwhelming outrage, the feelings of helplessness and the pangs of heartbreak sting each time. For those in Gaza, it's a struggle for survival, as Gaza-based Human Rights Watch colleague Abir Al-Masri wrote, reflecting on last year's hostilities. He said, I struggle to find the words to describe the terror of lying awake at night, not knowing if I'd see daylight again, the anguish of those I interviewed who survived, the obliteration of their families by Israeli regime strikes, the agony of seeing Gaza's prominent towers reduced to mountains of rubble. On August 5th, the Zionist regime authorities struck the home of Taysir al-Jabari, an Islamic Jihad leader, without clear provocation. Israeli regime Prime Minister Yair Lapid cited an imminent threat, as he claimed it was by Islamic Jihad, following the Zionist regime's arrest of and apparent mistreatment several days earlier of another Islamic Jihad leader in the West Bank, Bassam al-Saadi. On August 5th, Israeli regime authorities struck the home of Taysir al-Jabari. At least 49 Palestinians in Gaza were martyred, including 17 children, during the Zionist regime strikes. And also, the human rights groups investigated the event, and it will take some time before there would be a full accounting of what took place exactly. But there were some preliminary observations based on years of documenting previous rounds of hostilities against the Palestinians in Gaza. First, the Zionist regime's dropping of explosive weapons with wide area effects in the densely populated Gaza Strip causes foreseeable harm to civilians. During last May's escalation, Human Rights Watch documented unlawful Israeli regime strikes and war crimes, including strikes that martyred scores of civilians, wiping out entire families and destroyed four high-rise Gaza towers full of homes and businesses with no evident military targets in the vicinity. According to a Save the Children report from June, 4 out of 5 of the children they interviewed in Gaza reported living with depression, grief, and fear after 15 years of closure. And the Palestinian digital rights group, Hamle, reported again that social media companies were taking down posts by Palestinian and pro-Palestinian activists about events on the ground. Human Rights Watch last year documented how Facebook wrongfully removed and suppressed similar content, including about human rights abuses committed by the Zionist regime during the May 2021 hostilities. If we have learned anything, though, it is this. So long as there is impunity for serious abuses by the Zionist regime, Gaza remains an open-air prison, and Israeli authorities continue to commit the crimes of apartheid and persecution, there will be future rounds of hostilities. Until the international community brings sufficient pressure to push the Zionist regime authorities to abandon their long-standing policy to cage, smother, and subdue the Palestinians of Gaza, this vicious cycle will continue.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is part of the speech delivered on January 23, 2022 by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with the eulogists of the household of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa ali on the occasion of the anniversary of the birth of Lady Fatima al-Zahra salamullah alaiha.
A hay'at is a social unit and institution that pivots around love for the household of the Prophet. A person who has a question should not think that everything is upside down. No, his question should be asked, and that's all right. The answer should be provided in hay'ats, in centers of knowledge and understanding. This is the meaning and essence of hay'ats. As for dynamism and movement, this means benefiting from art and face-to-face dialogues. The difference between your art and many other forms of art is that you face your audience directly. You speak to your audience and they communicate their feelings to you. In other words, you are in contact with one another in a reciprocal, direct relationship. This is the dynamism of the hay'ats. Another form of dynamism is forming daste in the streets, where groups of mourners walk in the streets, in the alleys and in the markets. As a talented brother of ours said, the daste for Imam Hussein are in fact a symbol of Imam Hussein's journey from Mecca to Karbala. His was a movement of jihad and a movement on the path of Allah. The next point about hay'at is the struggle, jihad, for clarification, as I mentioned before.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
So the hay'ats rely on struggle. What does this struggle mean? Jihad or struggle means an effort and endeavor made to confront the enemy. Not every effort is jihad. Many people make an effort. For example, they make scientific and economic efforts, which are good, but they are not an act of jihad. Jihad means an effort that targets the enemy. This is jihad. In Islamic terminology and in Islamic logic, jihad is an action that is taken to confront the enemy. If you do economic work to confront the enemy, it is an act of jihad. If you do scientific research work to confront the enemy, this is an act of jihad. If you speak out and clarify matters to counteract the enemy's temptations, this is an act of jihad. All of these are jihadi acts. So the important point is that we should identify the fields for jihad in every era. This is very important. We should not make a mistake in identifying the enemy. I have frequently given the following example. Some people fall asleep in a trench at the front and wake up after some time. They do not know where the enemy is and where their fellow soldiers are. So they may point their gun at their own friends. Sometimes this happens. Some people do not know what the fields for jihad are. They do not know where they should go, where the enemy is, which way they should look, and what the target should be. This is what is important.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.